How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. In a couple of moments, we're going to be joined by Court Bauer talking, quite frankly, what is most likely going to be the biggest story of the entire year, and that is the purchase of Strikeforce by UFC. Got a text message yesterday. Called up Dave Meltzer immediately. He had just heard it. And the next thing you know, everybody is aware of it. Dana White announced they had purchased Strikeforce. It is a deal that has been several months in the making, although it did come about relatively quickly. This was not something that had been worked on over the course of a year or anything like that. Strikeforce was looking to sell. People were interested in buying. There were at least one other, perhaps two other bidders. UFC outbid them. The reported number in the $40 million range, it was right around that number. They have got complete control over everything. The tape library, all of the current contracts, all of the current deals, including Showtime, CBS. There will be no interpromotional matches at this point. There will be no grudges held, reportedly, at this point. That means guys like Josh Barnett, Frank Shamrock, as of this moment, still working for Strikeforce. The heavyweight Grand Prix supposedly is still on. Coker, Scott Coker, the head of Strikeforce, will be given a budget. They will be allowed to bid on any fighters that UFC releases. Of course, if a Strikeforce fighter's contract expires and UFC wants to bid for him, they can do the same thing as well. I think most people that have followed the pro wrestling world, the pro wrestling landscape, and ironically, almost 10 years ago to the day, WWE bought WCW. So those that have followed that story, if you haven't, Death of WCW is a great book. I'll talk about that later, but probably know where this is inevitably leading. But we're going to talk a lot about that today, and Court Bauer is going to join us in the next segment. He has been working on a television product with project with Frank Shamrock, so he's obviously got a lot to say. And he's a former WWE writer as well, so we'll talk about that. There's some other news as well, but most likely this is the top story of the day. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, how you doing today?
I'm not doing too bad. I wish somebody would have let Dana White, you know, get the memo, though, that you're not supposed to do business this way on a Saturday. You're supposed to wait till Monday.
Well, I'm kind of glad he actually did it on Saturday, to be honest with you, because Monday would have been a complete disaster. But yes, Saturday morning, terrible time to have to go back to work. We are joined right now by Court Bauer, former writer for World Wrestling Entertainment, and currently working on a project with, of all people, Frank Shamrock, who is still currently with Strikeforce. And Court, how you doing today?
What's up, guys? What's up, Mike?
How's it going?
Not bad. We were collaborating with Strikeforce and Showtime on this project as well. So it's a very intriguing weekend for me, and I'm sure for Frank, too.
Well, first off, tell everybody what the project is.
It's a reality show that spotlights Frank Shamrock in the next chapter of his career as he's now a retired fighter and he's a broadcaster, and he kind of is our guide into the MMA world. And not only does you track Frank, but you get to see Bigfoot Silva. You get to experience Fedor the week in New York City doing a media run, and we get to know Fedor intimately. I mean, you follow him and his whole crew, the priest and everything. We're right there with them. So you really, it was like jumping down the rabbit hole into the Strikeforce world, and to getting to know the fighters, getting to know Frank, the whole lifestyle and culture of MMA, in particular Strikeforce. And it's a really unique concept that hasn't really been done before. And also, you know, we'll track different events, be it New York, the legalization of MMA in New York, or the Grand Prix, whatever was going on, and we're still in production, and we'll continue to do so. We will probably be in San Diego in a few weeks, so that should be fun.
So is it essentially a Strikeforce reality show in some ways, just hosted by Frank?
No, it's really just, it's a vehicle that spotlights Frank and everyone he crosses paths with. When that happens to be Strikeforce, it happens to be all these fighters. So it really does, in an organic way, touch and help Strikeforce as a vehicle and a promotional vehicle, but it wasn't, and they were very cool and helping us and giving us access to everything, but it's independent of Strikeforce. But definitely a great promotional tool for them.
What were your thoughts yesterday when you heard that UFC had purchased Strikeforce?
I was stunned. Again, though, not like, wow, I can't believe the Strikeforce, never. But, because you never say never in this business or in any sports or entertainment business. But, you know, I had heard rumblings over the last few weeks about how overextended Strikeforce was when it came to contracts. And anyone that looks at Strikeforce, you know that their revenue streams are very limited. It's really a TV product, kind of like WCW mid-90s, where you're just really, and without the pay-per-view revenue, that you're just relying on that broadcasting licensing agreement you have with Showtime. So that's a real problem. And they weren't in a position where they could expand, really. The ownership had taken the property as far as they were willing to commit financially. And this property was too small to be big, yet too big to be small, and unable to grow because they lacked the funding for an infrastructure to grow. So, you know, it speaks volumes for the team that Scott put together in place for this, because they were so restricted in what they could do financially, from marketing to going out there and getting the top echelon licensing people to, you know, cut deals to get toys, to get the right video game deal, to get digital distribution, to go abroad and get international licensing for further content. To not, you know, have those people in place, you know, they took this baby as far as they could. And, you know, it's like a Rolls Royce that was going to run out of gas. I think it really was going to be inevitable from what I was getting. As this information was coming in, I was like, wow, this could really go down like this. So, you know, people shouldn't look at this as like, oh, my God, it's WCW Part 2 or it's Pride Part 2. They all were very unique acquisitions, and this one's unique because you have a living, breathing major TV deal in place with a ton of talent, with a brand that was, I think, possibly going to surge this year because of the Grand Prix, and some of the stars I think that could have broken out and might break out. So the reality is Strikeforce couldn't continue to go at the rate it was going. And they didn't have a budget really to market the pay-per-view that they were talking about. The staff was small and overworked, and now these burdens are all instantly gone with Zuffa coming in and injecting that capital and that talented staff where they need to help support the Strikeforce brand. So it'll still be interesting to see how this plays out this year, next year, and beyond, because it's a fluid situation. You never know how it's going to happen. And, hey, Showtime has a non-exclusive deal because they're promoting M1 on TV, I think, March 25th. So it's a very unique situation, and you can't really compare it to anything because it is a very unique situation.
This is a very big and complex deal on multiple layers in multiple ways worldwide, but people are obviously, you know, as soon as they heard the news, they get excited about, you know, a couple of key things, one of which being Dana White's issues with people like Paul Daly, Josh Barnett, Nick Diaz, you know, Mauro Ranallo, but the biggest one, of course, being Frank Shamrock, which right. He touched on when talking to Ariel Helwani yesterday. Obviously, working with Frank on this project and being with him in family life and in business life in the last couple of weeks, have you had a chance to talk to him? And what is your feeling working basically when WWE kind of being a monopoly in a way, and UFC in a lot of ways is kind of a monopoly, the thoughts of people like that who are not blackballed, but obviously Dana White saying they're going to continue to work with these guys because they have contracts, but afterwards, you know, like a silent blackballing, he may not want to work with Frank. And have you talked to him? How does he feel about that? And how do you feel about that as far as the business goes?
That's a really interesting question, Mike. I did talk to Frank briefly yesterday, and I don't want to go into, like, the real depth of the conversation, but, you know, he, like, I'd say 99.99999% of everyone in Strikeforce from the top on down was really finding out about this via the Internet, like all of us. And it wasn't like it was some, you know, let's get all the troops together and explain what's going on. Now, this deal happened really fast. So everyone, I think, was still playing catch-up and just still like, whoa, in shock of this. And I'll let Frank, you know, handle how he feels on this himself. But I would say this. When you start start to work with people that you might have had a problem with, and I've worked with people at WWE and after a WWE that I didn't necessarily get along with initially or from back in the day, what happens is sometimes things thaw out, and you do find common ground out of necessity for both parties, or maybe not. But the difference, there's so many differences between, there's a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences between Zuffa and Dana and Vince. And I would say that it's the acquisition of WCW, a lot of bad things went down. It was very petty with how they pulled the trigger and put that bad boy down to sleep. I don't think that Lorenzo Fertitta, Dana White, are going to go that way. They're businessmen before they put those egos out there. They got egos, but they're businessmen, and they're all about making money. And look at the last several years, and you'll see the track record of Vince and who's let his ego run amok, and the Fertittas and Dana, and you'll see the trajectory is radically different because WWE's left more money on the table than anyone I've seen in the last 10 years of sports and entertainment, whereas Dana and Lorenzo and that crew, they're about making money, and that's how Lorenzo became a billionaire along with his brother. I mean, that's the name of the game, is making money. And I think, look, people thought that Tito would never end up back working with Zuffa. Look what happened. And I think, who knows what will happen with Frank, but I think that's not out of the possibility something like that happens, or maybe it doesn't. What's really interesting to me is the silent other bidder in this whole process, and I have a little info on that. And it's really intriguing because they have significant capital and an interesting group of people that are involved with it, with this entity, this mysterious entity.
Now, when you say the silent bidder, we're going to have to go to a break here in a second,
yeah.
But it's kind of out there that one of the people bidding on this, or one of the groups bidding on this, was Pro Elite, which actually, for those that are unaware, Pro Elite had the CBS deal with Elite XC, and essentially they went out of business, basically. And now they tried to come back in and pick up the pieces. Very similar to Eric Bischoff and WCW. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Also joined by Court Bauer, former WWE writer, working with Frank Shamrock, Showtime, and Strikeforce, essentially, putting together a new reality show. And we're talking about one of the big stories, really, in the history of mixed martial arts, UFC buying Showtime. And before the break, we were talking about the irony of essentially Pro Elite, Elite XC falling apart a couple of years ago as a result of a debacle involving Kimbo Slice and Seth Petruzzelli. It's a very complicated story, but essentially they tried to, I guess, put together a deal to come back a couple of years later and then buy Strikeforce. They were one of the people bidding for the company, which of course brings to mind WCW when Eric Bischoff was in charge and he built it up to this gigantic company, the biggest company in the history of wrestling. The whole thing fell apart as a result of, quite frankly, blatant stupidity. And in the end, Bischoff tried to get a group together to come back and buy the pieces that he had essentially helped destroy. And it's a very similar story here. And as noted at the beginning of the show, it is almost 10 years to the day since WCW was purchased by WWE. It's quite fascinating. And Court, your thoughts on that?
It is fascinating. I actually, not to sound like a complete geek, but last night I tweeted, wow, things that make you go, It was, March 26, 2001 or March 23rd that Vince acquired WCW. And here we are, 10 years, a decade later. It's just something about March that brings us out, I guess. But it's interesting. The Pro Elite that is this entity that is possibly in existence right now, maybe in existence down the road. It's Pro Elite in name, but very little in other ways. I mean, the people involved are I'd say 90% different than the people that were involved that kind of facilitated the downfall of the last Pro Elite Elite XC venture. So it's a different animal. Maybe just the only similarity is the name. The people behind it have a great track record for operating sports and entertainment vehicles and properties and developing them and creating revenue streams and, you know, doing all you need to do to facilitate a property. So it's an interesting mix of people, and they were the ones that jumped in first on Strikeforce, and then Strikeforce smartly opened it up and created a bidding war, and it happened very quickly. I would probably imagine, based on everything, it probably was a very quick, maybe 30-day deal, you know?
I want to ask both of you this question here, because Dave Meltzer and I did a couple of shows at WrestlingObserver.com this weekend, and if you're a subscriber to the website there, you may want to check them out. We talked for probably at least an hour and a half on this over the last couple of days, just all the details of the story. But one thing that we sort of disagreed on, and I want to get both of your thoughts on this, is he believed that this merger, since basically you're going to have one gigantic organization now with UFC owning both UFC and Strikeforce, and they're going to be operated separately, but, you know, UFC runs a ship, and if they really want somebody, they're going to get whoever they want, and, you know, Strikeforce is going to obviously be number two, and, you know, when UFC wants to get rid of someone, they can go to Strikeforce, and when they want someone from Strikeforce, they're going to grab them, so, you know, the balance is going to shift even further, and Dave thought that, like with any merger, this is not good for the fighters, and I disagreed in the sense that when you think of a giant merger that is not good for the fighters or the workers or however you want to term it, it's usually because you had two big organizations that were competing against each other, and the larger one swallowed up the smaller one. So the fighters or the employees or the workers, they don't have that bargaining power or that leverage anymore. To me, in this case, Strikeforce was, quite frankly, such a distant number two, and UFC already, to me, was largely a monopoly, that when you really think about it, aside from people like Fedor, who got just a ridiculous deal, that quite frankly, his deal was so ridiculous that might have even set the wheels in motion for this whole thing.
It was a titanic deal.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. It was a titanic deal.
Yeah. So aside from guys like Fedor and Dan Henderson, for example, I mean, for the most part, when you look at the payouts for the Strikeforce guys, I mean, they're not really making a lot of money. And with the UFC guys, even the undercard guys, sometimes you look at their payouts and it's like, wow, he only made, you know, $10,000 for that fight. And of course not. You know, most everybody is making more than is listed on their payout. So it just seems to me that the gap between the two companies was so wide that very, 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 very few guys had any leverage anyway. And for the majority of the Strikeforce roster, it's just like when WEC got merged into the UFC. I mean, I don't think there's anybody that is making less now than they were when WEC was operated as a separate organization. I think that everybody, with a few exceptions, I think most everybody on the Strikeforce roster is going to be making more money now that they're part of a UFC than they were two separate companies. And let's start with Mike, your thoughts, and then we'll get Courts.
Well, just look at the bonuses that were paid out for the last UFC Fight Night show. And, you know, and stuff like that, that Strikeforce, you know, there's just no way they could have been able to do things like that. And, yeah, I mean, it's bad in a way for the fighters in that if you look at Strikeforce as great competition to UFC, then, yeah, you go, okay, there's just one less company to fight for. Just because, I mean, 5 to 10 years from now, will Strikeforce be their name? Yeah, it could be, but, you know, it's still looked at as underneath the UFC. So if you look at them as competition that way, yeah, I guess so. But realistically, I mean, think about the Grand Prix. If this was a little bit of a different time, those were pay-per-view events. I mean, at the very least, they were CBS-level events. So this is actually only going to be beneficial for fighters in a lot of ways. Obviously, if you're on the outside looking in, it's going to be tough. But if this opens up opportunities, look at Nogueira, who at some point in the United States, I mean, it's questionable now whether he's going to have the legs to continue on the UFC heavyweight division. But he could go to Strikeforce when this is over because of Scott Coker's ties with Japan, and that's something they have not been able to do. They have the Wow Wow deal over there, the UFC does, but maybe he gets to go to Japan for one or two more fights promoted under the Strikeforce name or something like that. I mean, I think it's just too early to say this is this is doom and gloom for fighters because the UFC is trying to build an NFL-style brand, not necessarily a WWE or what has traditionally been done in boxing. They're trying to build a NFL-style of thing, so the more they get, the better it is, and the better it could be for fighters down the road.
Court, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I see it like the NBA a little bit, too. David Stern's kind of an outspoken guy. Sometimes butts heads with, be it, you know, the players, sometimes the coaches. And it's very similar to that, and I think that's where they're going. I agree. I think a guy like Nick Diaz, who has been very vocal about his paydays in Strikeforce and wanting to get better paydays and how you're going to do that, and maybe he's going to go into boxing and stuff. Well, now this provides him with an opportunity to have perhaps an even larger access to more viewers, which means more sponsorship money, better bonuses because you're maybe going to work bigger arenas, and all these different things he was very limited to with Strikeforce. They had X amount of money, and they only could work within that budget. And, you know, the problem with when you're competing with, you're trying to be a number two, is sometimes you make bad deals. You make deals that, you know, the whole company hinges upon, be it ECW going to TNN back in the late 90s, or in this case, signing Fedor to a massive contract. And yes, Showtime is on that contract too and all that, but that was a massive contract and you have to justify it. And it became very hard to do so since last summer. And that's a major thing. So, you know, fighters also are going to now have the opportunity to have the whole process streamlined. You're not going to hear about getting your bookings, you know, 4 weeks out, 6 weeks out, 8 weeks out. You're going to know, unless there's some crazy emergency where they need you to come in and bail them out, you're going to know well in advance, which is something you didn't have a luxury in Strikeforce. You didn't have that luxury in Japan, and that helps. I think that helps the fighters be able to know where they're going to fight and, you know, 95%, you know, locked in that that's going to happen on that date. That's a huge advantage for a fighter to have that peace of mind. Plus, they're going to have access to marketing and licensing, be it toys, be it clothing, be it posters, whatever it is. Strikeforce never had that. You go to Strikeforce's website, and they did as much as they could with the talented, small infrastructure they had, but they did not have the ability to cut those deals. They didn't have those people in place. Now you can have a Dan Henderson figure that maybe you couldn't have had before, or whatever it is. You know, the video game deal that EA Sports put together really wasn't helpful for Strikeforce as a brand. And I guess the fighters, you know, cut their own deals individually. But now that's streamlined, and that might not help the fighters as much, but their exposure, I guarantee, will be better in the game that UFC produces in conjunction with Strikeforce.
I know we're 2 minutes away from break here, Court, but quickly I want to ask you about branding. A lot of people are, you know, will Strikeforce confuse the marketplace and this, that, and the other when it comes to the UFC? Could it just be that UFC presents Strikeforce? I think branding sometimes, as far as confusion, the marketplace is overdone when it comes to MMA. What's your feeling upon multiple names and multiple champions?
Since WWE, I've always been a fan of one heavyweight champion, one champion for each thing, and you don't water it down like in boxing. I'm not a big boxing guy. I know a little bit about boxing. I have a lot of friends that are hardcore boxing fans, and no one's positive on like, you know, 200 champions at that weight class and everything. And I think if you build equity in the champions you have and you make them stand out, which it is possible they can do under the current layout of the titles, the 14, 13 titles that between the two brands. You build that equity over X amount of years, and then you finally do the unification matches. Those are good money matches. Separately, I think fans have figured it out to an extent as it is and get Strikeforce as a different brand. And, you know, look at the numbers that Strikeforce's Grand Prix did in February. Those were good numbers for a premium channel that's not an A-level channel. Those are impressive numbers. So I think fans will get it, and I think you'll see even better even a greater surge for Strikeforce awareness in the next few, maybe the next several months, because you'll have the whole process streamlined, a better infrastructure that didn't exist. Those are all things that will help the company, will help the brand, and people already got it, and I think more people in the mainstream will start to...
Actually, Court, we've got to head to a break right here. We'll pick it up when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information on pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Tons of news in the... Actually, as soon as this show ends, Dave Meltzer live running play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view, which we'll talk about in hour two for a while. Also, radio shows. If you love this show, you only get a chance to listen to it once per week. You are missing out. Sign up at WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 per month. You can pay 1 month at a time. You can get a year. Suffice to say, we do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. We did shows all this weekend. This past Wednesday, did three shows in a single day. We've got a lot of other people doing shows as well, talking mixed martial arts, wrestling, the history of MMA, pretty much everything you can possibly imagine. If you've got a commute, if you like to listen to stuff at the gym and they just need more audio, that's the place to go. Not only all of the new shows, but we have thousands and thousands of hours of audio in the archives dating back to 2005. Every show we've ever done is up in the archives right now. Some of the biggest...
I used to be stuck on the way to Stanford in traffic going to WWE, and I had the old school iPod, and I used to have the Brian and Vinny show. And I'd listen to you guys bitching about the TV show we'd go into, right? And I'd be laughing my ass off. I think that's a very valid point. Yes. Oh, I wish we could have done that. I've been listening, stuck in traffic, going to WWE since, 05 to your shows?
05, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, your shows have been playing at Titan Towers for 5-6 years. I'm sure they're still playing today.
One of these days, we'll have to go back and look through some of the things that we thought sucked and look back at it 5 years later. That'd be a fun show.
Oh, God, yeah, then I need to send you my therapist bill.
Now, I wanted to go back very quickly to something. I had a follow-up question that I wanted to ask as well about this whole idea of whether or not this is good for fighters. Now, obviously, if you look 5 years down the road, and we presume that UFC absorbs all of Strikeforce, and you've only got one organization, and they haven't really expanded past where they are now, and they only have enough fights for 220 fighters, let's just say, then yeah, you're going to have a lot of people out of jobs, and it's going to be very, very rough for the fighters. The difference between this and wrestling, one of the reasons I kind of have faith in this deal, I don't think that Strikeforce is going to remain a separate organization forever or anything like that, but Dana White, over the last couple of years, has talked a lot about expanding throughout the world. In court, we can talk to you about this. Vince McMahon had a similar idea. He wanted to essentially expand around the world and have like a WWE Mexico and a WWE Europe, and he would have wrestlers based there.
Yep.
And they would, you know, they would operate a touring company in that part of the world, and they'd have their own television in that part of the world. It would be just a separate organization there. And obviously that never came to fruition. But with Dana, he's been talking about expansion for years now, and they are really expanding rapidly all over the world. So it's really hard to say where everything is going to be in 5 years. Yeah, there's a possibility in 5 years this could be horrible for fighters. There may be one organization, there may be slots for 220 guys, and everybody else has to have a real job or get out of fighting or whatever. Or we could have something on the extreme other end of the spectrum where UFC really is international, running shows every single weekend. They need 500 to 600 fighters just to keep this thing going all around the world. Everybody's making a lot more money. I mean, I look at it, you know, I kind of compare this if WWE bought TNA, for example. You know, one could argue that, oh my God, there'd be one monopoly again. It'd be horrible for wrestling. There would be no competition. But on the other side of the coin, there's no competition right now. The girls in TNA, you know, some of them make $500. You know, they've got these ridiculously small... They'd all be making more money if they worked for WWE. Almost everybody in TNA would, except for a couple of guys like Sting. So it's impossible to say right now. And Court, we'll get your thoughts first.
I mean, it's so hard to look down the road 5 years from now. You look back, the economic state of the world in 2008 and where technology was in 08 versus where we are in 2011 and how the economy is, stateside and abroad, and where things are going digitally and being able to stream stuff via, you know, your Apple TV or your Xbox or your PS3 or your whatever mobile device you have, being able to have access to UFC on a worldwide basis in 5 years, who knows what that's going to be as a product, broadcasting rights and all that stuff. No one knows, but the thing that Zuffa does and does very well is they hire the creme de la creme of personnel. And they've hired a very good person to head up their stuff in China with a fantastic track record for bringing an American brand that no one has an understanding of to a foreign market and excelling with it and cutting those deals. They got that guy in place in China, which is a very tough place to have the right people in place for. They got a great guy in Canada, and look how Canada's doing. They put the right people in the right places, and they know how to execute. And people love working for them. Everyone I know that's worked with Zuffa in some capacity has really enjoyed the experience, and they're willing to go the extra mile, and they see this as like a culture, as a corporate culture that they really want to see flourish. WWE is not like that. It's like a corporate Iraq or something, or Iran. It's just the dictator dictates, and you just, that's your marching orders, and you're kind of like a zombie. It's a different culture, and you get different rewards for that, and Zuffa's excelling at it. So it's very hard to see where you're going to be in 5 years, but I think it's, you never know what's going to be out there as a competitor to UFC either. I mean, we don't know what the marketplace is going to be for fighters later this year. We don't know who's going to be out of a job, who's not. You know, some of these guys that work for Strikeforce and UFC, they have one fight left on their deal. Dan Henderson, for example. We don't know where Tito Ortiz is going to be. You know, what happened to Bobby Lashley? He's not with Strikeforce. He's not with UFC. You know, I mean, you have a lot of interesting people that could be in the mix later this year that you might be able to cobble together a pro elite brand or whatever that brand X is. You know, you have.
Well, actually, I wanted to, let me cut you off there very quickly, yeah, since it's something you started to talk about, but we didn't actually get into more. You know, you mentioned a silent bidder, I guess, that perhaps had a lot of capital behind them. Again,
right,
when I woke up Saturday morning and I got a text that said UFC bought Strikeforce, I was like, hold on a second, what?
Yeah.
And everybody, I mean, everybody was caught off guard by this, because you never know what is going to happen. And,
right,
you know, this is all speculation, but, you know, Dana was talking yesterday. Ariel was asking him, does Showtime know about this and what do they think? And he's like, I haven't talked to him yet. I mean, what happens if on Monday Showtime says, screw this idea, we are canceling Strikeforce, and they lose Showtime, and that silent investor, you know, maybe they get in bed with Bellator, or you know, they get that Showtime deal, and the next thing you know, by the end of the year, we've got a competitor. I mean, maybe not a strong one, but maybe at the level of Showtime, of Strikeforce now, or something, where, you know, they can start building up a competitor to this UFC. You just never know.
Yeah, you'd never know, and you could have a Black Saturday type scenario like you had with TBS and Vince McMahon in the 80s. You really could, because there is bad blood between Ken Hirschman and Dana White. And Dana knows, you know, he's not backing off. He's like, yeah, we're not boys. But you have Lorenzo there to help, hopefully, get things to be cool and chill and everything. But, I mean, you could have a scenario, because obviously, like I touched upon before, you have a non-exclusive deal in every broadcast deal, no demand, unless you have massive leverage like your Aaron Spelling had going into his deals. You don't call the shots if you're Strikeforce when you cut that deal. They had no leverage. They had no TV partners. They had it was a take it or leave it deal. So yeah, they can opt out probably. Will they? Who knows? And what's your alternative? You know, if Dan Henderson's available later this year, if Tito's available, if Roger Huerta's available, if Ninja Hua, you know, if you want to have a stunt promotion type thing with Kimbo Slice, or you know, Jamie Varner and Royce Gracie, whoever you can cobble together to build this round along with young guys, yes, you could very quickly do it, but it's you never know. And this silent third partner third bidder in the mix of this thing could just, you know, vaporize and never, you know, pop up again, or could be in the mix for the next 6 to 8 months. You never know. It could be an infliction deal. It could be another pro elite. You just never know. But there's a lot of people that see opportunity to make a lot of money in MMA and monetize a brand or fighters. And I don't think we've seen the last of a startup company. I think there'll be more, and they may range from the Bellators and IFLs of the world to the next Strikeforce. I don't think we're done with that. But I do think that things are streamlining now. I do feel that we're going to have a more streamlined mainstream national entity that hasn't, you know, between Strikeforce and UFC hadn't been there.
As it's grown with the sponsors on board and everything, I mean, with UFC, Showtime's been trending upwards, whereas
HBO subscribers have stayed flat, even though they have far more than Showtime does still right now per month. Showtime continues to go up. They seem to be, well, they obviously are very supportive of boxing. They've made a lot of smart moves when it comes to boxing, and even with MMA, and there seems to be, you know, at least a soft spot now with the Pacquiao deal done with Bob Arum and with trying Elite XC and trying Strikeforce, that there seems to be somewhat of a soft spot at CBS. With that said now, as far as the UFC goes, does this give them, I mean, how much leverage do you think they play between NBC Universal, which is obviously that whole deal with Comcast and Versus, which they already have a relationship with. They have now CBS Corporation when it comes to Showtime and CBS. HBO, which has done a terrible job with their boxing and how they pay for it and how it's structured. How much do you think they're going to be able to play each other against everybody else? And from a business point of view, is it good to be, because I look at it like the NFL, I think it is it good to be in bed with everybody? They have the ESPN deal in Europe, which is obviously owned by ABC, or Disney, which owns ABC. I mean, they put themselves in a hell of a spot. How much are they going to play off each other, and to your knowledge of how successful they could be doing that?
You know, it's better to have more partners than less, and I think you're right. I think going about it like the NFL, in terms of you want to have your product out to the masses, is the way to go. And with every merge, acquisition, and failure, UFC as a brand becomes stronger, and it confirms that this is the brand. These are the people that get it done. Like every time a league wrestling promotion fails, it just more equity towards WWE, more equity towards WWE. Vince McMahon, no matter how much he's becoming the 2011 version of Virgil Gagne, he still gets validated because he's still the machine that works, and UFC is the machine that works, and they don't have a Virgil Gagne up there, you know, calling the shots.
I wanted to ask you, we've got about 3 minutes here, so of course I'm going to give you a loaded question going into the break. If you were Dana White, you were in charge. I mean, we've been critical about things over the last several months here in terms of Strikeforce production. And, you know, I've always felt that they need to do more to promote, and there's an argument that, you know, Showtime calls the shots. But to me, there are always things you can do in the body of the show, things your announcers can say and that sort of thing to promote your next events. And obviously there's, you know, some people complain about stuff like pyro. I don't know how important these sort of things are. But if you were in charge, what would you work on? What sort of production changes would you make to have a better show? Obviously, taking into consideration that Showtime is going to, say, assign Gus Johnson to post-fight interviews.
It's very simple. It's the simplest thing about booking, be it wrestling or MMA. It's presenting matches that people want to care about, making people care about the fighters and the match and the issue and the consequences. If this guy wins, he gets a title shot. It's a grudge match. It's this, whatever. And Strikeforce has not been good at that, presenting talent, presenting matches that you want to anticipate. Frank Shamrock was a self-promoter, and, yeah, he's a friend and everything and a business partner, but he gets how to promote himself and get a match over and know his role. No one was helping manipulate, produce talent, produce matches, and market them, and that hurt Strikeforce, and they had a lot of people they had access to help push that towards that direction, but there was a philosophical issue with Showtime over that, I think. And so, you know, Zuffa does it. They get it. They know how to do it better than anyone out there right now. I don't care who you want to name, but they do it the best. Now, will that change with Showtime? That's going to be really interesting.
And actually, let's follow that up very quickly here after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and Court Bauer of World Wrestling Entertainment, formerly of World Wrestling Entertainment.
Jesus Christ, just gave a shock down my spine with that.
Not curse this poor man. But, Court, this is our final segment here in the hour, and very quickly, your final thoughts on this deal and where you think the world of MMA is going.
I think we're going to a world where you're going to have a lot of interesting new fresh fights. I think the reality of the situation was ownership took Strikeforce as far as they were willing to commit to it financially, and so people wish it had stayed as is. They were dreaming because they were overextended. They had reached their limit, and Now they have a lot better resources to work with to get to the next level. Now, will we be there in 5 years? Will it be there in 10 years? Who knows? That's the big question mark. But it was either Strikeforce was going to sell, and who better to promote Strikeforce right now than the people that have a great tracker for promoting MMA, and that's Zuffa.
Well, Cord, I want to thank you very much for doing the show today. I'm sure we'll probably have you on again at some point, as we always do. In fact, in a couple of weeks at WrestlingObserver.com, for those of you that are not subscribers, here's a great reason to sign up, besides all of the coverage we've had over the last couple of days. We're going to have a WrestleMania WWE Writers Week, where I think we've already got about 7 former WWE writers lined up. Every day the week before WrestleMania, we're going to have a show, and Court is among the many going to be on. We'll be talking about his time in WWE and some wacky stories there, and a full week of WrestleMania writers. It's a series we do every year before WrestleMania. It's a fun time. So, Court, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, the road to WrestleMania stops at the Wrestling Observer.
That's right. So we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. I want to thank you very much again for helping us out today. And we are about to go to our top of the hour break. At some point in hour two, we'll talk a little bit about this TNA pay-per-view that is coming up. We'll also talk about the earthquake in Japan. It's had a big effect on Japanese pro wrestling. We'll talk to Mike about that. And we might have some other guests popping in and out as well. So that's coming up in hour two, a historic edition of Wrestling Observer Live today here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, although, quite frankly, we're largely just talking martial arts. UFC has bought Strikeforce. Spent the entire first hour talking with Court Bauer, formerly of WWE. He is now working on a project, a television project, with Frank Shamrock in association with Showtime and Strikeforce. So we had a lot of insight. And in a couple of moments, we're going to be joined for a segment by Dave Meltzer, giving us the latest on this story and some of his thoughts. Wanted to direct everybody to our brand new Facebook page, the official Wrestling Observer Live Facebook page. If you head up to Facebook and type in Wrestling Observer Live, it should come up. I just started plugging it, and we got about 6 people signing up in the first 30 seconds, so I have no idea how many people will be signed up by the time most of you hear this and by the end of the day, but hopefully many of you. We're going to be trying to update it with the latest shows. It is going to grow. It's just now getting started, but sign up there. My personal Facebook as well is at Brian Alvarez, facebook.com/Brian Alvarez. I've only got room for about 70 more friends before I hit the 5,000 limit, and then I don't know what I'm going to do. They have not fixed it yet, so you can have unlimited friends. So I guess we'll see what happens, but those are both available at Facebook.com. But for sure, sign up for the official Wrestling Observer Live page, or just click like. It's free, of course, at Facebook.com, and it'll probably be set up in association with Twitter and some other things as well. We got a lot of ideas, so check that out at Facebook.com. We're also going to be talking later on this hour about the TNA pay-per-view. They've got a pay-per-view today, believe it or not. I know it is, in fact, quite hard to believe based on television. They waited until this past week's show to essentially plug all of the matches. So that is coming up here in the second hour. And after this show is over, immediately following the show, Dave Meltzer is going to be up at WrestlingObserver.com doing live running play-by-play of the event. All of the matches in details, who won, where they're going leading into their traditionally, believe it or not, the biggest pay-per-view of the year is not Bound for Glory. It is Lockdown. So we'll be talking about that on the front page. And then later on tonight, Dave Meltzer and I, special radio show for subscribers only at WrestlingObserver.com, running down the event and talking more about UFC and Strikeforce. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, and making a return to the show today, the founder of this radio show, Dave Meltzer, is here on the line. And Dave, let's get right into it. What is the latest on the Strikeforce deal today? Anything new?
There's really nothing new since we did the last update last night. It's just now it's a matter of, analyzing how it's all going to go down and watching it happen, which is going to be a slow process. So, I think the first, Dana White's going to be doing a media conference tomorrow, and then after that, they've got the show on Saturday in New York, so I'm sure that'll be, or in Newark, actually, so I'm sure that'll be you know, the main topic of conversation there. There's a lot of potential positives. There's a lot of potential negatives. For the fighters, I think it's a negative. For Zuffa, I think it's a positive. I mean, they really are going to have control of all the talent. I mean, it's never been the case, and I never thought that that would be something that you could ever do. There will be people who start up, but there's a real problem here. You know, it'd be like if we try to start up something in pro wrestling, it's like, you know, we could do it, but there's no talent. Everybody's under contract now. It's to two different companies in pro wrestling. Anyone worth anything, you know, for the most part, with some exceptions, but marketable top guys. Here, it's all in one company. They've got everyone. I mean, you know, I mean, yeah, you could make a name here, Eddie Alvarez or somebody like that, but okay, so Eddie Alvarez fights himself. You know what I'm saying? There's no big fights that anyone can put on. It's not like years ago where there was a Frank Shamrock on the outside or you know, plenty of different guys. You know what I mean? Before, you know Diaz and, you know, now. And, you know, I mean, Herschel Walker's a freak show thing. You always had Fedor. There's no one. You know, all the top guys from Japan are either going to be in Zuffa. Or, you know, I mean, the ones that are marketable, I mean, that Kid Yamamoto came in, Akiyama came in. And with Strikeforce, if they don't do well in UFC, they can be sent over to Strikeforce. You know, I mean, as far as, there's a lot of different ways they can handle this.
Now, let me ask you this here very quickly, because we were talking about this in the second hour as well. You and I were talking about this a couple of times on the shows this weekend. As far as this not being good for the fighters, what are your thoughts on the expansion of UFC? I mean, I was talking about this with Court. WWE obviously had this idea of doing all of these satellite promotions around the world, WWE Mexico, WWE Europe, these groups that would operate entirely in these countries. This never came to pass. Now, if UFC does expand, and they are looking at this idea of we're going to run every single weekend, at least every single weekend, all over the world, all these different countries, I mean, is this really bad for fighters if they do end up in a year or two having slots for 350 guys because they're running so many shows?
Oh, well, I mean, if there's more jobs, if they run so many shows, there's more jobs available. It's better as far as more fighters being able to have jobs, but it's going to be, you know, they're not going to have, but the top guys are not going to be able to negotiate better terms because they got nowhere to go. So yeah, it'd be better for the. If there's more shows, but this would be the case no matter what. If there's more shows, it's better for bottom guys. More bottom guys will have jobs. It's still not better for top guys. It might be worse for top guys because, in another way, because the more you dilute the product, you know, if you have like top, you know, top guys on a show. I'll just give an example: BJ Penn on the show in Australia. It gets paid by the. You know, percentage of the pay-per-views. That show didn't do well on pay-per-view. So for BJ Penn, being on that show wasn't as good as if he was on a show in Las Vegas or in a show with a, you know, a different opponent. And if you, again, there used to be a baseline that was 300,000 buys. And we're not that much below it, but we are below it now when it comes to pay-per-view. But if there's so many shows where that baseline goes down, even for top guys, unless it's one of the super fights are going to do big business, and that's going to happen for years to come. But when your rank and file show starts going down, and it's not like that hasn't been happening for a year now, then, you know, even for guys that are named fighters, unless they've got, you know, the fight that really clicks with the public, you know, it's actually worse for the, it's actually, you know, was already getting worse for them, or could potentially be getting worse for them, you know, in the future.
Well, as it pertains to top guys as well, I do agree that you're very tippy-top guys. It is not good to have one giant monopoly and no one else to bid against. But
or even reasonably top guys, because, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, just perfect example of this is Robbie Lawler, who has a great contract with Strikeforce. The reason he does is because, you know, UFC would not bid to the level of Strikeforce. So this was an example of a guy that, you know, Eddie Alvarez and Bellator is actually the one exception over there, too. I mean, it's like he's got, you know, he makes over 100 grand a fight with Bellator, and UFC would have not paid him anywhere close to that. Antonio Silva was another one that UFC was interested in, but, you know, Antonio Silva got a lot more money, actually first from Elite XC, and then Strikeforce bought the contract. So, I mean, there are guys that, you know, are making, you know, there's a lot of guys who are, man, and would go the other way. Tito Ortiz, you know, used Strikeforce's leverage and got a great deal to come back to UFC. Some would argue far more than he deserves at this point. So, you know, leverage always helps.
Okay.
Not just tippy top, but, you know, even if you're, you know, Gilbert Melendez or, you know, Robbie Lawler leveling up, put it that way. You know,
okay.
You know, Eddie Alvarez leveling up.
All right, let me say this, though. That is true. However, let's take Robbie Lawler, for example. Let's say that Robbie Lawler, what was he getting per fight in Strikeforce?
I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it was, you know, probably 100.
Okay, let's just say he's making 100 per fight in Strikeforce, and UFC was only offering, let's say, 50.
Yeah.
So he got a much better deal from Strikeforce. The difference between UFC and, for example, WWE and pro wrestling companies to me is, in pro wrestling, and actually in a lot of different organizations, if they don't have to pay you, they won't. However, if Robbie Lawler were in UFC, and let's say he's only making 50 as opposed to the 100 in Strikeforce, you just got to look back to the last show where there's a great fight with Martin Kampman, of all people, and Dana White ends up giving both of them a $160,000 bonus. UFC...
Well, there's always the potential, but the point is that your base... A lot of these guys' bases went up because they could leverage on, you know, on both sides.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, even if you're like Clay Guida, just as an example, and his contract comes up, okay? I mean, a mid-level guy, kind of popular, and there's two organizations, and everyone knows your name, and he's an exciting fighter. You know, it's like, instead, you know, yeah, he could still get his same bonus, but the point is his base fight salary could go from 50 to 100, based on the fact he could play both sides, and both sides kind of would want a guy who, you know, is kind of a good utility fighter. I don't know if he could get, you know, well, he probably actually could because he's got a good name.
Sure.
So this takes away that leverage. You're going to get what you're going to be offered. And, yeah, you know, if you're, you know, they bonus every, you know, yeah, you know, UFC will bonus people. I'm not saying anyone's going to starve in UFC. If you're a good fighter, you're going to get paid well, but you could have gotten... losing that leverage always hurts. No matter how good UFC does in the future, you know, losing that leverage hurts. Now on the pay per view end, yeah, the top guys with pay per view percentages, which made up the bulk of their pay, you know, they're gonna draw based. You know, most of their salary is gonna be drawn based on that pay per view. But that's the top whatever it is, the top, you know, 5% or 3% of the guys.
So we are looking, we haven't talked about this yet, but at some point, likely this year, we are going to see, probably for the Grand Prix Finals, unless there's like a big disaster and the finals end up being two guys that were doing, you know, prelims early or something like that, but we're probably going to see the finals on pay-per-view.
No one said that, but I just think that that's completely logical, you know. That's certainly what, you know, I mean, and again, you look at the precedent, UFC did make money on the WEC pay-per-view, so... In their minds, they can take a second brand, and then this is, you know, this is bigger names in theory. You know, it's heavyweights, it's the finals of a tournament. You know, I mean, the other one, you had Uriah Faber and literally nothing else. I mean, Aldo was not a name to the public at the time, and they did well. And these guys, you know, and UFC has the means to promote it. You know, they can promote it on Spike, they can promote it on their other, you know, all across their other things. So, yeah, I would think, you know, no one said this, but logic to me makes sense that you would have those Grand Prix Finals on pay-per-view, and you would have occasional Strikeforce shows on pay-per-view if the right fight comes along.
Well, Dave, I want to thank you very much for doing this segment here. I know that we're going to be back later on tonight after the TNA show. We'll be talking about that pay-per-view, and I'm sure probably a lot more about this as well. And if you have questions about this, you can always send those to WOL. At Wrestling Observer, actually, I'm sorry, mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com for tonight's show. That's mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com. And Dave and I will get into all of those questions. We did a show last night taking questions as well, and another show on Saturday afternoon just talking all of the news from the deal. So, Dave, thanks again. We'll be back in just a moment doing a quick preview of the TNA pay-per-view. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Talking mixed martial arts most of the day, but now it is time to get into the TNA Victory Road pay-per-view. Yeah.
Are you sure we can't continue to talk about mixed martial arts?
There is a TNA pay-per-view tonight, everybody. And I know some of the wrestling fans are just going to be outraged that we're making light of a TNA pay-per-view after talking for an hour and a half about mixed martial arts. But listen, everybody.
Wait, how can we make light about a TNA pay-per-view when we have the wonderment of what's going to happen to people like Gina Carano and Cyborg and Marlos Conan and when it comes to their women's division? And how could we make fun of a show that might have Angelina?
Not only that, but everybody, this is a show that even TNA isn't taking seriously. This is like a bridge that they're not expecting anybody to buy between now and lockdown. So we're going to get into the pay-per-view in a second, but I didn't want to mention, since you brought them up, the women. At this point, Strikeforce, as Dana White made very clear in an interview with Ariel Helwani, it is business as usual, meaning that the Strikeforce shows are going to go on as planned. The Grand Prix is going to go on as planned. There are not going to be people jumping back and forth and that sort of thing. And the women are still going to fight for the time being at Strikeforce. Now, a year from now, when the Strikeforce Showtime contract is up, it's at some point in 2011, in a year, God knows what is going to happen. It's impossible to say. It's really impossible to say what's even going to happen tomorrow when they make the official announcement. But for the time being, girls still going to fight. Everything is going to be business as usual, according to Dana. And at some point next week, we're going to have Ariel Helwani on our show at WrestlingObserver.com. For those of you that are subscribers, we'll talk to him about his half-hour interview with Dana, in which basically they broke the story. So we'll talk about that with him and a lot of other stuff. But
and, you know, about women, too, when it comes to business, I mean, Sean Gannon was brought in. Kimbo Slice was brought in. James Toney was brought in. All things Dana White probably said he would never do at some point or another. And one of his things is there's not enough women to create good divisions, which actually is true with how they're trying to find, you know, to match up opponents when it comes to Strikeforce. With that said, I would not fall over shocked if there are women's fights. You know, if it's a big enough fight, it will end up in UFC. I would figure under the UFC banner, even if it's not their name, at some point down the line anyway. Women's amateur wrestling continues to increase throughout the world. You know, it's increased in America. This is not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, women are not going to be a part of the Zuffa future.
Mike, can you name a single match on tonight's Victory Road pay-per-view?
I think it's Sting. Is it Sting and Jeff Hardy again?
That's good.
Okay, I got that one at least. So there's that, and there's I know some Jersey Shore action, I guess. I don't know. They didn't do a very good job on Thursday telling me.
Well, let's look at this card here. That is, in fact, our job here on this program, to be professionals and talk about TNA on a pay-per-view day, even though there are significantly larger stories in the world. And we'll talk about the Japanese earthquake and how it has affected wrestling in Japan as well. And for anybody listening around the world on the internet and you're in Japan, our very best wishes to you. And in fact, let's be serious. This is a way bigger deal than TNA. So let's talk about that. Gigantic earthquake. Obviously, it is a huge disaster. It has also affected pro wrestling in a number of ways. And Mike, a lot of show cancellations. It appears that everybody in all of the major promotions, both domestically in Japan and the foreigners from this country and elsewhere, are okay. But give us the update.
Yeah, that's been kind of, and it's been a good thing, obviously, but it's been kind of an amazing thing when they're talking about 100,000 people that have died. I mean, you know, immediately when it happened, it was, you know, kind of went on Twitter. And it was MVP is over there. Carl Anderson is over there. Giant Bernard, the former Prince Albert, is over there. As
I should note, actually,
Ayako Hamada was here this weekend.
Actually, Mike, hold on one sec. I just wanted to clarify, 10,000 is the death toll at
point. Oh, I'm sorry, 10,000.
Yes, it could end up significantly higher, but 10,000 is where they're at right now.
Okay, well, it's still just awful. But
still a complete disaster.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of Japanese women that were over here. I mean, and it was a scary, obviously, it's still a terrifyingly scary situation with the gas leak or the nuclear leaks and things like that. But, yeah, I mean, New Japan, there's been a couple shows now that have taken place, but there obviously has been, you know, mass changes to the schedule for every single promotion, either postponements or cancellations all weekend long. Dragon Gate was one of the only ones who seemed to not be affected too much, but almost every other promotion in Japan was. But one of the, you know, there is, you know, making fun of a lot of social media, and there's a lot of wrestlers when it comes to WWE who shouldn't be on it, especially if they're drinking late at night. But where it pays off great, it was to actually be able to find out from people in communications that way. on Twitter from guys like MVP and Carl Anderson, just letting people know that they were okay, that everyone they were around were okay, and it seems to, you know, for as tragic as it was, the small little silver lining for the at least the professional wrestling community and the fight community seems to be at least, you know, there hasn't been too much that way as far as anything bad. So it's just a shocking, I mean, a 9.0 earthquake is just, I'm still just stunned by the entire thing. And this is, you know, it's been a lot of big news already at the beginning of the year. UFC and Strikeforce, we have leave Donna Goldsmith leaving WWE. This is going to play serious havoc on promotions and how much money, disposable money is out there and buildings and just all of that stuff that's not really important in the grand scheme of things is still going to play havoc on the Japanese wrestling scene. So it's already been a very eventful 2011.
And actually, on the day that the earthquake hit, it was a bad day for many different wrestling and MMA related organizations in Japan, in the sense that the Sengoku main backer pulled out. That promotion is on its last legs. They've already announced that fans should prepare for them going out of business, essentially. One of the major, I shouldn't say major, it was not certainly one that, you know, not to the level of Tokyo Sports or anything like that, but one of the major MMA and pro wrestling magazines ceased printing a print publication. They're going internet only. K1 is on, FEG is on the verge of going bankrupt. It is a rough time. If you look back, you know, when we talk about UFC buying Pride and everything like that, and that was, in many ways, Pride, I guess if you look at, like, Pride in the sense of Antonio Inoki and New Japan guys going over there and getting destroyed, I mean, Pride in some ways helped destroy, or at least badly hurt, the pro wrestling business. Obviously, there were a lot of other things as well, including, you know, losing TV and TV being moved to obscure time slots. But Pride did a lot of damage to the pro wrestling industry. The death of Pride did huge damage to the martial arts industry. And Japan right now, in terms of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, it's at its lowest level that it's probably been at maybe ever.
Oh, definitely ever. I honestly believe ever, and that includes amateur wrestling. If you include sumos, because there's nothing but gambling issues and beatings and marijuana and all these things that are that have taken place in the sumo community. I mean, the fight world boxing with the Kameda brothers, everything is down in Japan right now, too. I would bet, almost guarantee my life, to the most epic level it's ever been. And one of the benefits, again, that comes out of this UFC deal is when there is scorched earth, and there are a lot of hoops to jump through in Japan, which Dana White has talked about on several occasions, but if, with them going into China, with them wanting to go into Brazil, with them wanting to possibly go into Russia, I mean, a lot of what WWE actually is wanting to do, too, I mean, they do parallel themselves. It may not be the best time, but as it continues to go on, this is probably as good of a time as ever for the UFC to start laying seeds in, and anything they can do somehow to help with that, this is probably the best time to do it.
You know, I wonder about, I mean, when you mention, and we talk about all of these, just really the landscape being what it is in Japan and pro wrestling and particularly mixed martial arts. I mean, obviously there are still, in Japan, there's still a lot of fans that would love to watch mixed martial arts, and their options are more limited as each day passes. And obviously one of the big issues with running MMA in Japan is the idea that it is often very difficult for Japanese fans to accept a company not run by Japanese. And Mike, you can talk a little bit more about that. But you know, I always wonder, I mean, it's always kind of been that way. You know, why did it not work when UFC tried to get a television deal and run in Japan? Well, it was an American company trying to run in Japan, and the people really did not want to accept that. As strange as that might sound, that's kind of the way things work. But when it gets to the point where there are no other real options, will they accept an American company running mixed martial arts in Japan because there's nothing else?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Tokyo is not going to be Montreal for the UFC. It may, hey, who knows? You never know. It may be, but I seriously doubt it will be. But when there's a lot of small promotions that are, you know, the Japanese can stay loyal to, I mean, it's not like, you know, MMA is going to be disappearing or kickboxing or any of that stuff. It's just not, you know, until a Japanese-owned promotion in Japanese starts spring back up again, I mean, there's at least a chance to have a foothold there, and you can, again, Dana White wants to run lots of shows all over the world that don't necessarily have to be, you know, on pay-per-view and on Spike and on TV here. I mean, if you run a show there that's aimed purely at the Japanese market, don't spend a whole lot of money on it. Don't hype, I mean, you hype it up there to the best of your ability. I mean, you don't have to have it here. You don't have to worry about what fans think about the perception of it here. It doesn't matter. It's like, you know, if they signed five more Chinese guys or in a UFC show, you know, American fans would be going, well, you know, the one guy went to a draw. I can't remember. I forget his name off the top of my head right now. But, you know, you have those guys for specific markets doing specific things, you know, whether it affects the North American business or not. And I think that's where fans here, when it comes to these types of deals, kind of forget that these are all, it's all working towards something bigger. All this is working towards something bigger. It has been. A lot of people complain about fighter contracts. I think the UFC should have been paying fighters a lot more money than they did. But one of the excuses that nobody ever said was, you know what, they're trying to bank money. And you see where WWE and UFC have...
Actually, Mike, I've got to cut you off here. We've got to head to a break. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on a very newsworthy edition of Wrestling Observer Worldwide. Brian Alvarez here on WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi also of WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, you were wrapping up our discussion of mixed martial arts in Japan. Just want to let you finish up, and then we'll seriously get into the TNA pay-per-view.
Well, I was just, you know, just saying that, you know, as far as, you know, them bankrolling money, and that's why, you know, Court talked about it earlier on. You know, we'd be reading about it in the Observer on the website and the shows you did with Dave. I mean, it's just there was only X amount of dollars to keep going with, and the UFC has been very smart about how they have gone into markets and developing things. And again, they may—I doubt with the way Japan is, and it's just the way Japan is, and probably will always be. I mean, they like cell phone companies and all that. I mean, all of that sort of stuff. The UFC may never be that huge there. But now would be a good time to do it, and them going into different places. And again, it's some of the stuff that they're going to be doing, North Americans probably will scratch their heads at. But, you know, we have to see where it all shakes out when it's all said and done, because so far, again, you know, people wondered about the Abu Dhabi deal. Just, it was more money. It was non-voting stock, and it gave them money, and it gave them security on more money for the future. I mean, we have to see how this thing turns out, because for the most part, UFC has done a lot. They're not perfect. But they have done a lot of this stuff very, very right in Japan. Again, because of the way amateur is, boxing is, sumo is, kickboxing is, the mixed martial arts, because of the way it is right now, Scott Coker, long relationship, those ESPN K1 shows were running for years, and the Strikeforce, under the Strikeforce name, K1 running pay-per-view here on ESPN. A lot of people forget about that and how big of a hype Bob Sapp was, you know, having the weigh-ins on ESPN News and all that sort of stuff. I mean, that... You can utilize it. This is the best time for them, too. And I think this is as good of a time as ever for them in Japan right now.
All right, let's get into this TNA pay-per-view here. We've got to talk about this, as this is the final segment here on the show.
Oh, and apparently no Jersey Shore. I'm sorry, Winter and Angelina.
Oh, my God, Mike. How could you screw this up like that?
Sorry.
All right. The main event of the show, Jeff Hardy and Sting for the title. Sting, actually, this may not even be the main event. I don't know. I presume it would have to be. It's a championship match, but in the official lineup, I don't even think it's listed last. But Jeff Hardy and Sting for the title. Sting just won the show on, or the title on television. They wanted to make a big splash on the big show with his surprise return. And do you picture them putting it back on Hardy already, or are they going to keep it on Sting for a little while here?
I think they keep it on Sting with some sort of wackiness coming out of it. It just, I don't know. There would have to be. I mean, with Sting coming in there, I don't see why you'd give it back to Hardy now again until... Now you have it on Sting, you can just keep it on him for a little bit until Hardy actually does go back to court. I mean, I wasn't big on taking it off of him anyway, but that's a completely... You know, we've talked about that enough with Hardy and the title and all that other stuff, but I think the title stays on Sting, but I'm not sure exactly where they go from here.
I just wanted to mention very quickly our Facebook page. In the last, I'd say about 20 minutes since I plugged it, we've had 108 people join up. So, again, that's on Facebook, Wrestling Observer Live Official, and you can head up there and check it out. We're going to be updating it regularly. We're going to be putting shows up there. All of the free shows are going to end up here as well. So if you're a freeloader, this is the place to go, aside from the main Wrestling Observer website at WrestlingObserver.com. You can head up here, and we'll be putting the Wrestling Observer Live shows and a lot more up, so check it out. That's Wrestling Observer Live on Facebook. Gonna have to get Mike up there as well. Mike, I know you're not on Facebook. I don't know how it's possible here in 2011, but you're the guy.
I know. I'm getting around to it right now. I'm still trying to hype up the Twitter account, the little A, Semper Vivi.
At Semper Vivi.
Twitter, but that's not as important as ours, the WONF4W Twitter account.
Hey, you can check out at Semper Vivi for Mike and at Brian Alvarez for myself. And we've also got a Twitter at let's see if I can do this, at WONF4W, always making it simple here on the show, at 1F4W. And you can check, these are all available on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com as well if you don't remember them. But that's my Twitter and the official Wrestling Observer Twitter as well, which is basically our RSS feed. You can get the latest headline sent to your Twitter at the Observer one. And mine, I post pictures of my cats, talk about things like that. Very rarely updated. I don't get drunk and post like the wrestlers, but check those out. All right. Also on the show tonight, Matt Hardy, AJ Styles. Hopefully it's better than the one I saw at the house show, which was essentially a WWE prelim house show level match. I would think on pay-per-view it'll probably be pretty good, but they're doing that match as well as Mr. Anderson and Rob Van Dam for the number one contendership. And your thought on those two matches?
Anderson, I just see getting screwed out of this again. I mean, I think he's better off as a heel, and, you know, he's kind of gone that way of now being kind of in the middle about being upset with Sting but not getting his title shot, and then, you know, RVD got into the mix and all that sort of stuff. I see RVD winning, Anderson not being happy about it, and he continues his, I think moving him to a heel would be the smartest thing to do anyway, so I see something like that happening. So I guess it would end up possibly with RVD and Sting then in that scenario, but it is TNA, so that could all change drastically when it comes to Thursday.
And speaking of it is TNA, I should mention that the Victory Road poster has one man on it, Kurt Angle. He's the only man on the poster, and he doesn't have a match on this show. How does that happen? Let's move on. Angelina Love and Winter against Rosita and Sarita in a tag team match. I also saw this on a house show, and it was okay. It was not horrible. It was not really any good. I guess we'll see. But this is for the TNA Knockouts tag team title, which is a title belt that actually still exists, in fact.
And means so much, too. But Rosita and Sarita, just because I would say Rosita and Sarita, but that, I don't know. The Angelina Love Winter Velvet story, I think, must continue. So you might as well put it on the Salsa Girls.
I would guess we'd have a title change here. I don't see why not. And obviously, I'm sure that'll build up some sort of cage match. Maybe Angelina Winter and Velvet. I don't know.
That's one of the problems with this show, much as a lot of TNA shows, too, and a lot of wrestling shows in general, of just like, when we're giving predictions and we're looking at it, it's just like when you actually say, in this, why not? And it's actually as legitimate of a reason as anything else. That's a hell of a situation.
Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer in a singles match will probably be all right. I don't see it blowing the roof off the place or anything like that, but I'm sure something will happen that will set up all of these matches, everybody. These are all setting up cage matches for the pay-per-view that they actually think is important, Lockdown. So I don't know. I'm sure Bully will win. He got beat up on TV, so he'll probably win here. And right now, just a singles match, but I can't imagine them not turning it into a hardcore match.
Thank God Dreamer's kids aren't there for Bubba or Bully to beat up on. Then he'd really be crying.
A completely random Ultimate X match with Kazarian, Generation Me, and Robbie E. All right. I'd be stunned if Kazarian didn't just retain the title.
That's what I would think, and then I don't know if we get Kazarian Robbie E action or something like that, but Yeah, I think that the Bucks are probably going to do moves and land in ways that look like it'll hurt.
Hernandez and Matt Morgan are having a match. It is a first blood match, which would probably mean a lot more if there wasn't blood all the time in TNA. Also a way to avoid having somebody actually do a job. But they're supposed to be pushing Hernandez. He lost to Devon at the house show I went to. That's usually not good to give a guy a push. But at the house shows, largely the babyfaces all just win and everybody goes home happy. So I would think Hernandez is going to win here. But he did bust up Matt Morgan on TV, so maybe I'm wrong. It doesn't really matter, quite frankly.
Well, they didn't get smacked around by AJ Styles, too. And again, what's been forgotten about in all this, too, is, you know, he went down to Mexico and everything. Why am I supposed to hate Hernandez when it comes to Matt Morgan anyway? Didn't Matt Morgan try to break his neck and then do nothing on the microphone for the last few months to make me like him?
Yeah, he nearly killed him at an angle, supposedly.
Yeah, so, but what's the first match?
I was actually amazed because, like, when they sent Hernandez to Mexico, it was like the idea was he'd get over big and they'd come and they'd bring him back as, like, a huge Hispanic babyface. And then they brought him back, and the very first thing they did was Flair asked him to be in his group, and Hernandez just said, okay, and then he was a heel. It's like, what? I don't know. And, yes, the opener, actually, I swear to you here, I am more looking forward to the opener than any other match on this show by far, because this is almost the same match I saw at the house show that was awesome. It's Beer Money versus Ink Ink. And the house show match I saw was Beer Money and Scott Steiner against Ink Ink and Jeff Jarrett, which was just a fabulously fun match. So Beer Money and Ink Ink, I'm thinking this probably will end up being the best match on the show.
Yeah, I would figure that way as well, too. I mean, Jesse Neal is, you know,
he's ridiculously
a lot
good.
Better than I thought he would be at this point. I mean, he, in the thing with Shannon Moore, again, not the greatest name or, you know, the team in the world, but they do work very well together. And with Beer Money, again, this is one of those ones where you can't think about it too much, too, because you're not sure, all right, who are you rooting for in this? I mean, they didn't really, they're supposed to both be fan favorites. It's not like they built it up with pure sports, you know, build or anything like that. So I'm figuring Ink Ink is going to get booed because everybody loves them some Beer Money. And Beer Money retains, but yeah, it is probably going to be the best match on the show.
So that is the lineup for Victory Road. And as noted, is a secondary pay-per-view leading into the Lockdown show, which is coming up next month. And that is usually the biggest, in fact, the two biggest buy rates that TNA has ever done in their history have both been Lockdown. So that's going to be coming up next month, and they're going to be, I presume, putting all of their promotional efforts behind it as opposed to, say, a TV show, as they have been doing of late. But I'm going to jump into a couple of the questions here very quickly, and then we will wrap it up with the final segment. So here we go. This person wants to know, what do you think will happen to Tito now that he can't go to Strikeforce? And is UFC losing credibility by keeping him with this record? No one cares about records except the hardcore fans. The casual fans that make up the bulk of your audience, they just want to see stars. And Tito Ortiz is a star. So he could have a 0-100 record, and there would still be people that would pay a lot of money and watch television whenever Tito was on. So don't worry about UFC and credibility in terms of win-loss records. And as far as Strikeforce, he can still go to Strikeforce. As of right now, and for at least the next year and a half or so, they will be operated as separate entities because of the fact that there are contracts with Showtime and fighters that need to be, these contracts need to be honored. And so if he loses in his next fight, then UFC can cut him, and Scott Coker has a budget he can work within, and he can offer Tito X amount of money and sign Tito to Strikeforce. So that's how it's going to be working for the near future. Where it goes long term is anybody's guess. Mike, go ahead.
No, there's always the exception to the rule, too. I mean, Arturo Gatti got beat a lot, but people loved to watch him because of the style he had and all that sort of stuff. And again, as long as the dollars, you know, equal out to the pay-per-view buy or the rating or whatever it is, whether people like it or not, and maybe it's not the guy that they want, but there's always going to be the exception to that kind of rule, always.
Got a question here. This person says, I'm planning to go to Vegas for the July 4th weekend. UFC shows are going to be a show on July 2nd in Vegas for sure. Any word on who will or could be fighting? This is from Dustin. It is not 100% until they actually make it official, but the plan is July 2nd at the Mandalay Bay Event Center. And I don't know who is likely going to be fighting. There are rumored fights on the event, but I you know, I don't really know anything right now, so I can't say. Other than UFC has asked for the date, and it has been granted to them. So I'd say it's about 95-99% that they're going to run there. We got time for one more. Notice that nobody on Impact has mentioned the TV bell. Do you think that's on purpose? Do you think creative has forgotten about it? It's possible. I don't even know who the TV champion is right now. Mike, do you know who that is?
I can't remember, actually.
Try and Google it here very quickly before we have to go
to
a break.
It was AJ, right? I can't remember.
It might be Abyss. We're running out of time. We got seconds here. It is Abyss. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. One last question here before we wrap it up from Charles here, wondering if you knew what some of the plans might be for programs in the WWE after WrestleMania. Do you think they'll go back to Cena versus Punk at some point? I literally have not heard a single post-WrestleMania program. Let me think about this. Have I? I don't think I have. Every program I've heard has been just stuff leading into WrestleMania. So I don't think they like to build up stuff after WrestleMania. In fact, they usually don't, and that's why there's usually a post-WrestleMania lull. But usually a lot of the post-WrestleMania programs are just rematches from WrestleMania that take place at Backlash. So I guess we'll see. Rock, it does not look like he is going to be on television at all until WrestleMania. Although, in a strange move, they announced he's going to be on the first Raw after WrestleMania. I didn't think they'd do that, because that essentially says, if you want to see Rock, you don't have to buy WrestleMania, you can watch the night after. Although I think most people are going to want to buy WrestleMania just to see what happens with him and John Cena. I don't know what it's going to be. That's a question for next week, but yeah. What do you do, Mike? 10 seconds.
Rock, Austin facing off, something about Tough Enough that night.
Well,
if not a rock bottom on John Cena.
They are actually planning at least some sort of moment at WrestleMania with Rock and Austin together. So for those of you that want to see that again, you better buy WrestleMania, because they're going to do it. We're going to talk more about this next week, as obviously noted earlier in the show. In a moment, WrestlingObserver.com, Dave Meltzer, live running play-by-play of the TNA pay-per-view. And later on tonight, Dave and I are going to be back with a brand new radio show. We're going to be talking a lot of stuff. We'll be talking more on UFC Strikeforce. We'll be talking the TNA pay-per-view. And, of course, we'll be talking about tomorrow's Raw. There are a couple of matches announced, including Bryan Danielson. Daniel Bryan is going to be facing Sheamus for the championship, the U.S. title. And if Sheamus does not win the belt, he says he's going to quit. So we'll be talking about that, all of the other news. Mike, I want to thank you as always. It was a huge show today. Fine job on this program. And of course, thanks everybody for listening. Check out the Facebook page for more and WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network.